Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota on Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Here on Redbox Media, I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic blogger. And today with us, we have Tommy Tai, a licensed married and family therapist who's worked in community mental health since 2006. He earned a bachelor's degree in psychology in 2003 from the University of California at Santa Barbara and a master's degree in clinical psychology from Antioch University in 2005. Tommy has contributed to Catholic Digest, Alicia, and CatholicMom.com. He records the Catholic Hipster podcast with co-host Sarah Vabulous. He has appeared on Relevant Radio, EWTN Radio, and a Catholic channel on Sirius XM, which runs his podcast, The Chimney. Today, we'll be chatting about his book, The Catholic Hipster Handbook, Rediscovering Cool Saints, Forgotten Prayers, and Other Weird But Scary Stuff. Welcome to the show, Tommy.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing good. I should say weird but sacred stuff, even though some of the Catholic stuff is scary.
Oh,
I want
yes.
people to know that we're talking about sacred stuff here.
Sacred stuff. Sorry.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
Right. So I'll preface that with the last recording I did with Adam Bly, and we were talking about exorcisms. So that
perfect. See, there you go.
In a slip of the tongue. Okay, so first off, can you tell us a little bit about your work? You've kind of built this brand of the Catholic hipster. Can you tell us a little bit about what your work is and what all you get involved in?
Oh, sure. Well, in terms of social media, it was mostly started off as a little contest on a blog that I started to kind of crown the coolest Catholic of the year about 4 years back. People got pretty interested in it and excited about it. And then it just became sort of trying to point out people who are doing really cool things while living authentic Catholic lives as best as any of us could hope. So we're just trying to point out that the faith is cool, the faith is great, and trying to bring people to that faith while spreading the good messages that everyone's got, especially on social media.
All right. So what does it take to be a Catholic hipster?
Great question. So a lot of people get turned off by the term hipster because it has a certain connotation now of people who are a little bit too cool, people who, you know, will only eat or drink certain things or only wear certain things. And so we're trying to flip that on its head a little bit and try and point out that Catholicism is about as hipster as you can get, because being a hipster is all about being countercultural. And right now in the United States in 2018, being Catholic is absolutely countercultural in almost every single way. So if you're trying to live an authentic life, you're praying, you go to Mass, adoration, you know, trying to do those things that are part of our walk with the Lord in the Catholic faith, then you are definitely a Catholic hipster.
Awesome. So I want to dig into your book, obviously, here today. What inspired you to write the book?
Well, it's kind of a unusual story, I guess. I just had made a joke on Twitter or made a comment about how it would be cool if a bunch of people got together to kind of contribute things that they love about the faith. And I got a response from Lisa Hendy, who started CatholicMom.com.
Mm-hmm.
And she told me, here's an email address of an editor at Ave Maria. Send them your idea. And I didn't really have an idea, and I thought it was a little bit weird because I wasn't really, like, deeply involved in Catholic social media at that point, so I didn't really know how much of a close-knit, supportive community there was there. So it was very shocking, kind of weird. I was like, oh, my gosh, Lisa Hendy is, like, responding to me. That's pretty pretty cool.
I've been there.
I'd recently started writing for CatholicMom.com. which is also a shows that God has a good sense of humor. And so I felt like since she gave me that opportunity, I had to listen to what she said. So I emailed her contact at Ave Maria, and then they said, yeah, let's do this. Let's make a book. And then I freaked out because I'm not an author. I've never written a book before. Mm-hmm. So I scrambled to find people who I thought would be able to contribute some interesting, exciting stuff alongside me so that they could beef up my subpar writing. And luckily, lots of people said yes, and the book came together that way.
Awesome. So for those of us who haven't read it, I have, but for those who haven't, can you name off some of the people you were able to corral into this project?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. It was super surprising. First and foremost, Jeannie Gaffigan, the wife of Jim Gaffigan, the Catholic comedian, wrote the foreword to the book. And, you know, her little tagline is on the front of the book. So that was really exciting. Then we were able to kind of corral Catholic social media to get people like Leticia Ochoa Adams, Sergio Bermudez, Matt Dunn, Sister Brittany Harrison of the Salesians, Lisa Hendy, like I mentioned, Melissa Keating, Stephen Lewis, who's known as Steve the Missionary on YouTube, Anna Mitchell from the Sunrise Morning Show, Mary Rezac is with Catholic News Agency, Father Kyle Schnipple, Arlene Spensley, who most people know from Chastities for Lovers, Catherine Mornatown, who does Catholic baby naming online, helping people get really cool Catholic baby names, my Catholic hipster podcast co-host Sarah Vabulous, who's known as the Catholic Drinky, mm-hmm. and Tiffany Walsh, who is an amazing contributor, podcaster, Catholic librarian, all that good stuff. So that's the stable of contributors that we got in this book, and they all have a very different perspective, a different style, a different sense of humor, and so it really kind of has something for everybody since there's such a wide breadth of people writing in the book.
Mm. And I got to tell you, if the front cover doesn't get much hipper than a picture of John Paul II with black sunglasses on.
I know, right? I mean, he is like the proto-hipster of Catholicism, so it was really nice. You know, it's really nerve-wracking as an author because you don't really have any, well, maybe because it's my first book, and when you get super cool, you get to have input, but you don't really have any input on what the cover looks like of your book, and so you're just waiting, not knowing that they're like passing around different cover ideas to other folks. So when that finally came in the email, it was pretty exciting to see his picture on the cover. It's fantastic.
Yeah. So as far as the content of the book, did you determine the topics or did the contributors kind of steer the ship a bit as the things came together?
Yeah, I definitely picked my own topics that I wrote about, which is why I have like five sections on Mary in there. But mm-hmm. I wanted everybody to sound very authentic. So a lot of people did kind of reach out and say, well, what should I write about? And I just kind of wanted to say, well, you write about whatever you feel you want to speak about. Kind of what are you excited about? What are you interested in? Because I thought that that would help to let them do what they wanted and make their voice a little bit more authentic. So I didn't want to like pigeonhole anybody like, well, you're the chastity person, so you've got to write about chastity. I just kind of flung the doors open and let them go nuts. And thankfully, they came with some great stuff.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to work our way through the book and we're going to hit each section of it. In section one, you call it rediscover the attitude, and you go into this essence and you state, and I'm going to pull a quote from it. It says, it's hard to put your finger on it, but it's an attitude unlike that of any other group I've discovered. So what is this attitude you found in Catholicism?
Sure. I think the main thing for me that I appreciate about our Catholic attitude is sort of hope in the midst of sorrow. I mean, I know that I'm sure most people like me have kind of experienced that life isn't always that great. There's a lot of suffering and trials and difficulties that go through life. But our understanding of like why there's suffering, our understanding of, you know, what's the point of our time here on earth, what's the meaning of our lives, the Catholic understanding of that gives us this great perspective. And so I think it's really impressive to me to watch other Catholics go through difficulties and still have this, I mean, attitude has kind of like a negative connotation to it just because right. We think of bad attitude, but to have this perspective that only comes because they get the Catholic faith and that pushes people forward. And so I think in our culture today, that's so important because how many times do we see the culture kind of fail and dip deeper into the sinful path that it's headed down? And it can be pretty depressing and not really hope inspiring. And yet we're still here kind of excited and banging that drum and still showing up. And I just think that perseverance, because we know where we're headed, is a really great attitude to have.
Yeah. And I think we have a unique situation, unlike denominational churches, in that you know, we have a 2,000-year history we can trace back. We know where we've been, and we know where we're headed.
That's right. Nothing is going to, you know, the gates of hell will never prevail, right? And we've seen, we can look back through those 2,000 years and see times that were equally as bad as today or even worse, and see that the church is still standing, still faithful, and still beautiful.
Right. You bring up another good point in the intro to this section one, and you stated, the Catholic faith is that something we've all been searching for, end quote. And time and time again, this keeps coming up. I've read it in books. I've talked about it in other interviews. I hear it from converts, and that is people constantly searching to fill this God-shaped hole they have. They can't fill it no matter what they try, with money, possessions, drugs, alcohol, whatever. They can't fill it. Have you seen this in your work as well?
Oh, most definitely. It seems like everybody is searching, right? It's like God's written on all of our hearts, and he's just sort of waiting for us to turn back to him. He's probably watching kind of sad that everybody's kind of turning away every chance they get, it seems like. But yeah, we're all searching for some sort of peace, and it doesn't come with anything that you mentioned, and it doesn't even come with like things that are really good, right? Like our family, our children, these things are really important to us, but there's still something, right? And it's, I think sometimes people are shocked when Catholics will brazenly say something like, you put God first, right? Your spouse second, and then your kids after that. And it sounds sort of weird to like a worldly eye, like, oh, you put somebody above your spouse. Like, that's so weird. But it's just like you said, it's that something that has to be on top in order for everything else to have like a right perspective. So I think it's like, if we don't submit to God and accept his will and worship him and have a relationship with him, all the other things that are important to us, even the good things, they're not going to be like the way that they should be. And I think we always feel that in a nagging sort of sense, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, if my prayer life is off, if I'm not really like, I'm kind of weird in that I like to wake up really early so that I can get prayer in, because once my kids are up, it's like a lot harder for me to get like some prayer going that, you know, we'll pray together, but personal prayer for myself.
Right.
If I don't do that and make that dedication to wake up early and pray for a couple of days, I notice something. Like, I'm more easily frustrated or rough around the edges or more judgy towards people. And it's easy for me to look and say, that's because I'm not availing myself to God's grace. Right. And so it's like, if I'm trying to then keep pushing without that prayer and fill that thing that's making me feel kind of, you know, rough around the edges, it doesn't get worked out until I realize, oh, hey, dummy, you haven't been praying. You haven't been reaching out to God and engaging in that relationship.
Right, right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Redbox Media, and we'll be right back with more from Tommy Todd. Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Paying too much for your healthcare costs? Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Best yet, Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. For more info, call 844-313-4999. Again, that's 844-313-4999, or visit SolidarityHealthShare.org. That's SolidarityHealthShare.org. And last last segment, we talked about section one, so we're going to roll into section two, Tommy. And in section two, you dive into what you call the stuff of Catholicism, the bells and smells, as you call them. And how can those things draw people into the faith and closer to God?
You know, it's funny because a lot of our non-Catholic brothers and sisters, God love them, and hopefully, you know, it's the week of Christian unity while we're recording this,
yes,
so hopefully
is.
We can all be unified soon. But the smells and bells and the things that we do turn people off for some reason, and it's too bad because they're really missing out on something special about the Catholic faith. And that something is that, you know, our bodies and the things of this world, the created world, is good. Right? It all has a goodness because it comes from God. And so Catholicism has this understanding that it touches me so deeply that we have this spirituality that's purely above the created world, and then we have the created world, and we know how the two fit together. So it's so important to me because I really, it's the way I experience the world. Like, it's great to have, you know, the water of baptism, right? It's great to have the feel of the rosary beads in your fingers as you're moving them. There's something powerful about that connects us to how we've been made and who we are, and also to God at the same time. So it's really powerful for me. And after I had kids, I realized how incredible it is for them, because, you know, going to a Catholic Mass is really interesting to them because of all the things that we do and that we have. Like, when the incense come out and they're blessing the altar with the incense and it's just raising up all this smoke, the kids see that and it's like, wow, something big is happening today because they're doing the whole deal, right? And it's just so powerful to me to have that tangible force in our faith. And I think it just relates to who we are as human beings and our experience.
You know, this chapter kind of struck me a little bit, or this section kind of struck me a little bit. I'm a convert to faith. And the first thing that hit me when I entered a Catholic church for the first time was the smells and bells, because it was my first Mass was a midnight Christmas Mass.
Oh, man, you went all the way in, huh?
yes, that was the first Mass my then fiancé took me to, so... Yes, who is now my wife.
That's fantastic. Rip that Band-Aid right off as fast
sure
as you can.
Sure did. Right on. Pour it in, let it get taken care of right away. But yeah, that's a big thing. And I think you're right in what you said there, that our separated brethren don't get it. They don't understand it. I came from a UCC background. It was a small country church. And comparing the two after I was in the Catholic Church, it was like, wow. I mean, it's just night and day.
Right. But look at like what Jesus did, right? It's like when he cured the blind man and gave him sight, he like rubbed mud on his eyes, right? Mm-hmm. When he was like stepping in when the lady was caught in adultery, he wrote with his finger into the sand, right? Like all of these like tactile, tangible things that he presents us that show that there's something, you know, he came to make creation holy for us and to kind of help us realize how holy it all was. So there's something really special there. And I think even I don't understand it, but you can feel it. You kind of know, right? It's like when the oil's being traced on your forehead, there's something powerful about that. Like there's something there. It's not just oil. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, I wish everybody could get that, because it's such a beautiful thing about our faith.
Right. And another thing I want to talk about during our interview here are the specific chapters that you wrote within the book. The one in,
sure.
in this section is, you did one called Take a Fresh Look at the Rosary.
Right.
I've interviewed another number of people about the rosary, but, you know, I think some people have a standoffish look at the rosary at times because that's what their grandmother did, you know.
Yeah.
So what fresh look can
true.
We give at the rosary today?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and I've said it before too. God bless all those old women that are praying the rosary, because they're doing it for us, and it's making a big difference, even though we don't realize it, you know. But I think first off, I would say I want to make sure that people hear that there isn't a specific devotion that you have to feel something about when you're Catholic. I think sometimes we can get into this guilty thing of like, well, I'm Catholic, how come I don't feel anything when I'm praying the rosary? So if people don't feel called to the rosary or it doesn't resonate with them, that needs to be okay. So I just like to get that out of the way first, because a lot of people can get stuck on that. Like, why is this prayer not clicking for me? Everybody else seems to say this is a Catholic thing to do. And we have a deep treasury of spirituality that you know, different things speak to different people. So for me, the rosary, even when I drifted away from being close to the church, I always had a rosary in my pocket. Even though I didn't pray it, I threw it in my pocket every day because I felt like there was this thing inside me that was like, well, if something bad happens, like if I'm on a plane and the plane's all of a sudden going down, I want that rosary there. I'm going to pull it out. And that was that always kind of fascinates me when I, exactly, right? Yeah. Looking back, I'm fascinated by that. It's like, even as I drifted away from some of the teachings of the church, why did I have that? Why did I feel like that was still something that I needed to hang on to? But to me, the only reason is that it's real and it's powerful. It's like, even when I was drifting away, I knew there was something special about the rosary. So, you know, taking a fresh look at it, this is my take. So at my work, we have a lot of workshops where they teach us things like mindfulness and meditation. And, you know, picture yourself sitting at the base of a tree by a river, and this is going to bring you this kind of peace. Mm. And that's great. I mean, that's nice, right? Sure, it calms you down and it makes you forget your anxieties for a little bit. Fantastic. But if you're going to, you know, want to have like the next level of benefit from meditating on things, meditating on the Gospels, now that's the thing that's going to get you somewhere, right? Like contemplative prayer, where you're actually thinking about the life of Christ and the Blessed Virgin Mary, is going to open your mind to all the graces that are kind of waiting for you if we can kind of hear this good news and then do something. So I think that it's another example of our culture is constantly striving for these things. And the Catholic Church is over here like waving the Vatican flag saying, hey, dudes, like come check this out. We've had this for years and years and years. You should come over here because this is going to point you in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So more people need to get into the rosary. Imagine if we could get secular people praying the rosary. Like if we could say, hey, try this. You've been doing this like Eastern meditation. Well, try this. Here's some beads. And how many people would be converted? That would be awesome.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. You also talk about total consecration in this chapter. You want to give us some insight on that?
Sure, I'm smack dab in the middle of my seventh annual renewal of the consecration right now.
Okay, so timing.
I'm on day 17, realizing that I am nothing more than a worm without God, and all the great stuff that St. Louis de Montfort helps us go through as we reflect during this time. You know, this was such a powerful thing for me. We had moved; my family had moved, and we were trying to sell our house where we were from so that we could have a house up here. And it was kind of a struggle. And I stumbled upon this total consecration from St. Louis de Montfort, and it knocked my socks off. It was so powerful to me to go through these 33 days to kind of prepare. And then, you know, at the end of it, you actually like sign kind of like a contract sort of, or like a prayer that you can print out and sign your name on, which is like a serious business. You mm-hmm. can't go back after you slap your name down on a piece of paper. Right.
Yeah.
So just you know, the recognition of the Blessed Virgin Mary's role in salvation for the world and for us, the fact that she brought Jesus to us, right? The fact that she's our mother interceding on our behalf, and sort of making sure that we go back to Jesus the same way that God sent him to us, right? So, like, God sent Jesus to us through the Blessed Virgin Mary, so why would we not go back through the Blessed Virgin Mary to get back to Jesus as close as we can? And so trying to focus on doing everything for Jesus, through him, with him, and in him, through, for, with, through, and in the Blessed Virgin Mary is what it's all about. And it means a lot to me.
Mm, right on. So I'm going to pull another quote from your opening pages to this section. And you said, it's all about drawing our attention to God and his plan for us as we continue to make our way through this busy and messy life. Loved that quote. That was spot on. And I think the biggest thing about that quote is the busy and messy life part.
Yeah, bingo, man. Life is busy and messy for sure, and we're guilty of letting it get that way, I think, a little bit, right? We sign up for too many things. We overextend ourselves and our children sometimes. It's so important to have things that help us focus back on what's important, right? It's like when you're rushing out the door to get to Cub Scouts, you've got a crucifix above the door that you just glance at as you're walking out, and you're connected to God, right? Mm-hmm. You've got your holy waters right by the door to dip your finger in before you drive to work, and it's a reminder of what it's really all about. So I think it's really easy to get caught up in our busyness, our anxieties, our sufferings, you know, everything that happens in our life, trying to get that promotion, you know, somebody cuts you off and that's not fair, and all these things that just happen in our day, it's easy to be zeroed into like, this is all there is, right? Mm-hmm. Like when we get so heartbroken or we get so upset or even when we get so happy about the things happening here, partly it's like we're zeroing in on the small frame that we have. And we needed to have things at the ready to help us expand our view and remember this isn't all there is. And that's difficult to do sometimes, but definitely the sights and sounds and touches of Catholicism help to refocus us on what's meaningful and important.
Right on. With that, we're going to take another quick break. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Redbox Media. Cleanliness is next to godliness. Do our closets have anything to say about the state of our souls? Popular Catholic speaker and Bible expert Mary Elizabeth Sperry explores the relationship between our stuff and Catholic beliefs in her new book on decluttering in the spiritual life, Making Room for God. She boldly affirms the goodness of our stuff and of God's abiding presence in the worldly goods all around us. She also reminds us of how sin can distort our relationships, including the ones we have with our possessions. Check out Making Room for God at AveMariaPress.com or look for it wherever books and ebooks are sold. And we're talking about his book, The Catholic Hipster Handbook. So we've gone through the first two parts of the book. And in part three, Tommy, you call Rediscover the Life. So what is this life that you're persuading us to rediscover?
Oh, sure. So what I think I need to do in my life, and I'm sure assuming a lot of people are like me, is I have to live my Catholic faith outside of Sunday, right? I need to be Catholic every day of the week and everything I think, say, and do. That's really difficult because a lot of times I want to, you know, drive fast on the freeway, but I've got a Catholic radio bumper sticker on the back of my car to hopefully remind me to do a good job. Or I want to respond in a snippy way towards somebody at work because they said something rude to me. I really want to focus on how can I present myself as a Catholic to other people. Lots of people know that I'm Catholic. You know, it's like the rosary is hanging from the rearview mirror. I take Good Friday off of work or whatever, right? So people kind of get the vibe that there's something going on there. And so I want to present myself. And it's mostly like I want to be able to live a good life, right? I want to go to heaven. But I also have to keep in mind that like the way that I live my life is like, hey, everybody, here's this Catholic guy. And so if I live it the wrong way or make public choices that are bad, people are going to think that about the faith. So that's the last thing I want to have happen. Still do it, though. It's a work in progress. It's a big struggle. But that's kind of the goal of living the life.
Right, right. Now, what are some ways that you found, either in your own experience or in the writings of the other authors in the book here, that we can integrate that out life outside of the hour or so we spend in church on Sunday?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mentioned that bumper sticker on my car. I got to give props to Catholic radio. I don't know how many people know that Catholic radio exists, but it's out there. Catholic podcasts like this are out there, and they're a heck of a lot better for you than listening to whatever pop music of the day is singing about making money and driving fancy cars or whatever they're talking about. What a great way to sort of, for me, like I listen to Catholic radio on my commute to work, and it's really nice to be able to have that just in my ears the whole time I'm getting into work. So I start off with the right perspective, right? Another thing that I do that I try to do is to incorporate the Liturgy of the Hours into my day. Anytime I can sort of spare a moment, I try and use my Liturgy of the Hours app to dig in and refocus myself on prayer. So it's like, you know, I don't know if people are like me, but I usually start the day by saying, all right, God, like today is the day I'm going to be good. I'm not going to make bad choices. This is it. I'm going to do my best. And then by, you know, 9:45 or whatever, I've messed up in one way or another. So when I can steal a moment to sort of, you know, jump into like midday prayer at noon in the breviary on my phone, it's a moment to like refocus and be like, okay, you know, just because you screwed up doesn't mean the entire day is lost. Mm-hmm. Like, let's recenter ourselves and try this again. And so I think that's really helpful to be able to have times for prayer. Set your alarm for prayer, like on your phone, to remind you that it's time to pray. The last thing I would say is, like, if you're spending time on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, you got to follow some Catholic folks because they're going to be reminding you of the faith all the time, right? It's like,
right.
One cool thing about Twitter is, like, I'm scrolling through Twitter and somebody will say, hey, can you say Hail Mary for me? I'm having a hard time right now. And that's it. And you can't help but stop and immediately pray for that person. And how powerful to go through your day if you're going to be on social media anyways. You might as well be picking up prayers and helping out the rest of the body of Christ, you know?
Mm, good point. Good point. So you mentioned the Liturgy of the Hours, and I want to bring that up just a little bit because people, I think, can be intimidated by the Liturgy of the Hours, mainly because
they view
it as the 4-volume book with about 50 ribbons in each volume.
That's right.
You mentioned the app, which obviously makes it a heck of a lot easier. Can you tell us a little bit of your experience of how you got started with the Liturgy of the Hours and some of it?
Yeah, definitely. I'd say maybe about 8 years ago, one Lent, I fell into that, hey, you should do something for Lent instead of giving up something for Lent. I tried that out one time. And the thing that I decided to do was to actually commit myself to praying the Liturgy of the Hours every day during Lent. The book is big. There's ribbons. You got to jump back and forth. And who knows if you're doing the right thing. So thanks be to God, there's a website and there's also an app. I use the one called iBreviary, which is super simple. You just download the day and then you click on the hour of the prayer that it is, and boom, it's right there in front of you to scroll through. There's no flipping back and forth in pages. It's so amazing because, you know, it's the universal prayer of the church, right? So for the church's history, the Liturgy of the Hours has stood side by side with the celebration of the Eucharist as like the church's form of public prayer. So it's so epic. It's like when you go to Mass, you're connected to all the Catholics around the world that are at Mass, you know, all the saints in heaven. And that's mind blowing. When you pray the Liturgy of the Hours and you just stop and pray, and I'd say maybe 10 to 15 minutes if you're praying it for each call to prayer, you know, that's being prayed by, well, it's being prayed by the Pope and all the bishops and cardinals and all the priests, and a lot of religious around the world are praying the exact same thing that you're praying, not to mention a whole bunch of lay people who've kind of stumbled onto it. And that is so cool. I mean, that is so Catholic to be like connected in that deep way with so many people. It's really, really powerful. You're not just praying on your own. You're praying with, you know, literally millions of people. That's pretty special.
Indeed it is. Now, I'm going to pull another quote. And like I said, you got some great quotes in this book. It's the time has come for all of us to rediscover the Catholic life, because that's the only way we'll draw others back to it as well, end quote. And that right there, Tommy, is what we're all called to do. We're all called to evangelize and draw others to Christ. And you and I know what direction each of us were pointed in to do that from what we're doing in our lives today. But what about those of us listening who are thinking, you know, how in the world do I do that?
Yeah. Well, you know what? One of the answers to that, I think, we just had the Feast of St. Francis de Sales just recently, right?
Yep.
For when, depending on when you're listening to this, could have been a long time ago, or maybe it's coming back again. But, you know, one of the things that he taught, or that he kind of let us know, was that we should try to be ourselves perfectly well, right? Mm-hmm. So all of us are different. We all have special charisms. We all have special talents. We all bring something to the game of evangelization, as it were. And if we can do what we do well, then I think we're doing the work that we need to do, right? Like, if you're a stay-at-home parent and you're going to just, you know, be the best stay-at-home parent you could be, then you're doing it right. If you're, you know, a janitor or a plumber or a construction worker or a CEO or any of these different things that people do for jobs, if you do it perfectly or strive to do it perfectly and do it for God, you're doing it. Like, that's the thing to do, right? You're not doing it because it's your dream job from when you were a kid. You're not doing it because you're making tons of money. You're doing it because you want to offer something back to the Lord and to all your brothers and sisters on earth, right? If we can focus on that, offer ourselves up in that way, that really, really speaks to people. You know, I think people will sometimes say to me like, oh, I don't know how you respond to somebody who says something nasty at work, and you just kind of take it and let it go off your back and just sort of respond to them in such a positive way. And that's a great opportunity to say like, well, I don't, you know, it's because I'm doing it for God. Like, I'm here for God. I'm not here for any other reason. And so returning evil for evil isn't what he wants me to do. Mm-hmm. And that's like an eye-opening thing of like, oh, wow, there's actually people who care about others for the sake of God. And I think it's a big evangelical moment. But we can do that changing diapers. We can do that mopping floors. We can do that, you know, doing therapy. We can do that in so many different ways, projecting what's great about our faith by the way that we live our life.
Mm-hmm. In another section of the book, you say that evangelizing is not today, is not your grandparents' way of evangelizing. So what makes our generation so different than our grandparents, so to speak?
Yeah, I know. I think that's in the section on Jim Gaffigan's show that he used to have. He had like a little sitcom that he and his wife created. And they do such a great job of, when I was making that comment, I was referencing how they do an amazing job, like evangelizing under the radar. Mm-hmm. Like in the show, they're an extremely Catholic family, right? They're going to mass. There's the statues of the Blessed Mother in their apartment, but it's never like an in-your-face sort of Catholicism. It's just sort of there, and everybody knows it. And I think that is a great way to evangelize. I think we need to do more in today's age to show that we're normal, right? We're normal, and we've got something even better. So
right.
That's part of, like, engaging in the media that people consume today. Like, I think that Catholics are doing a really great job being there, commenting on current events, you know, being involved in the jokes of the day and kind of being able to poke fun at ourselves and help people with their guard down to say, oh, wow, like these Catholics are actually all right. I'd heard so many things about them, but look, they're just, you know, having a good time and goofing off and there's something else too, right? It's like we can be present, we can engage in all this media just like everybody else does, but there's something behind it, right? And that's the Catholic faith.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of power in the way that we use media to sort of get to people. And people are open to it if we're authentic. So I think that's kind of the main key.
We keep talking about media, social media here. And another thing you brought up into one chapter, it's called Catholic Weird on Twitter. What makes Twitter such a great tool?
Well, it's brief, so that's good because we don't really have big attention spans anymore, it seems like, right? It's quick. And so that's something that I think appeals to people. You know, there's a couple reasons that Twitter is a great tool. One is it connects people within the body of Christ so easily. When I've needed prayer, I put it out there and boom, you've got, you know, thousands of people who are praying for you, people who don't know you. And that is pretty amazing and impressive. We're all there to pray for each other. And then in terms of engaging, like, it's great to be able to connect with other Catholics. So, you know, I live in the Bay Area. It's not the most Catholic place, although maybe you'd be surprised it's pretty Catholic. But, you know, we don't have a great reputation in the Bay Area of California for our faith. So it's really nice to go online and be like, oh, wow, there's lots of people who are just like us who are trying to live the faith in places that it's not easy to live the faith in. And that's really nice, right? It's nice to be able to share jokes that only Catholics would get because of what we've grown up with, or you know, the convert sharing joke with another convert about what it was like to go through RCIA. It feels really nice to connect with people in that way. And it's just great to evangelize. I mean, you know, there's lots of people who aren't Catholic who interact with Catholic folks on social media, and it's great to be able to like clear up misconceptions, show people love and appreciation instead of what they think the Catholic Church is like, and lighten up. That's part of the fun of Twitter.
Right. All right, we want to take one more quick break. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Redbox Media, and we'll be right back. Hi, I'm Pete Sox, the host of Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. Head on over to my show page at breadboxmedia.com and support my show and our work here at Breadbox Media by becoming a premium member today. And we believe it's more about giving than receiving. When you become a premium member for just $9.99 a month, you unlock incredible discounts from our sponsors like Rugged Rosaries, Catholic Books Direct, Lifeboat Coffee, the Mass Box, and the Harrisburg Senators, just to name a few. And it's even better. Every month, Breadbox Media chooses a nonprofit organization to partner with, and 10% of every premium membership is dedicated to that nonprofit. Join the revolution in Catholic media. Become a premium member by visiting my page today. Tommy, we've come to the last section of the book, and I think you've wrapped the book up really well. I'm going to pull one more quote here, and it says, "We have the answer to what is ailing the world. We have the solutions to the many problems we find as we walk through this valley of tears. What does the church offer to this messed up world?"
Yeah, the church, you know, as Pope Francis has said, is like a field hospital, right, for sinners. Jesus, of course, kind of framed that in his own way when he said that he came for sinners, not for the righteous, right? Mm-hmm. The Catholic Church recognizes this so well. I think this is a common myth that a lot of people kind of spew out in the culture. Like, you know, you hear people say, well, I don't feel welcome in the Catholic Church. Like, I've got this sin, or I've got this lifestyle or whatever, and how can I expect to go into that church? And I will say, and I would apologize, that I think that there are times that we are not welcoming, and that's something that we definitely need to work on, because that's not the message of the Gospels, right? Mm-hmm. But the church is like Noah's Ark, right? It's like traversing through this difficult world, and it stinks because all the animals are living there, and it just smells bad sometimes, but it's taken us to the promised land. Like, it's going to get us through the flood, and eventually we're going to have made it because we stuck to the church, right? So I think the church is this great place where we can all come together and be vulnerable and be ourselves and recognize that we need healing and be welcoming to everybody, which is kind of what the goal is. And then I think, you know, what I meant mostly by that was the church's teaching on redemptive suffering is the only thing that makes sense for people who are going through something really difficult and tragic and unfair in their lives, right? Job loss, child loss, divorce, homelessness, just all these different things that happen. And we look up to the heavens and say, like, why, God, why would you let this happen to me? The church has an answer to that. And if people are willing to kind of hear it, it makes sense. Like, when you're going through suffering, the church's teaching on what suffering means and what it can mean is like the only thing that makes sense. Nothing else does. So I think that since that's how life is for so many of us, the church having that answer is just like right there waiting to help us kind of figure it out and get through it together.
Right. And you talk about, again, you kind of come around to some of the uniqueness of the Catholic faith and the Catholic Church in this section, where you actually write a chapter about, and you title it Bones and Other Bits, Yes, Relics. Now, some people get creeped out by the whole relics thing, but they don't have a true understanding. They don't have a true understanding of it. I can imagine some people when some relics of Padre Pio are around here, and one of them happened to be a fingernail, of Padre Pio's.
Oh man, there you go.
Let me tell you. but they don't. It's because they have a lack of understanding of the significance of what these relics are. Can you talk a little bit to this topic?
Yeah, sure. My first real interaction came when the relic of it was the femur bone of St. Mary Magdalene was traveling around the country, and it came to the Norbertine Abbey in Southern California, where my wife and I lived near. And we went to go see it because, you know, as good Catholics, we were intrigued by the fact that we could go get up close and personal with the femur bone of the person who saw Jesus resurrected before anyone else. And I can tell you, kneeling in front of that relic was incredible. Mm. Relics, what they do is they help us to remember that our faith is not just a story, you know? I mean, I know that we say out loud, Jesus was a person who walked the earth 2,000 years ago, and all these people were real people. And yes, we say that, and we know that it's true intellectually, right? That we know that. It's fact. It's like undisputable fact. But a lot of times our faith can become a story to us. Like all these stories we've heard hundreds of times, they become just like any other story. So for me, relics connect us and like ground us in the fact that these people really, really existed. You know, they were created beings that were here. That is so powerful for me because it just speaks to the reality and the truth of the faith. That being said, you know, just the other day I saw a picture, but when the Pope was in Peru, I saw a picture of him praying where St. Rose of Lima's skull is. Mm. And I thought it was super rad, but I can see how people who aren't Catholic would look at a picture of a decaying skull and be like, what are you Catholics doing over there? You guys are so bizarre. I always think about when our non-Catholic brothers and sisters will say something like, oh, you guys have statues, you're so weird. Or, oh, you guys call priests father, that is so weird. I'm always like, boy, I bet you've never heard of relics, because if you'd heard of relics, you wouldn't have thinking all that other stuff was weird. You would be like pegging us on this thing because you'd have a right to, because from the outside it looks pretty bizarre, right? But hey, we've got museums where we have handkerchiefs from World War II generals or whatever, and nobody thinks that's weird. Yeah. So, you know, get with the program here, people.
That's right. Tommy, if you're looking for a place to go that's like the coolest place on planet Earth outside of the Vatican, go to Pittsburgh, visit this small chapel called St. Anthony's Chapel. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It has the largest collection of relics outside of the Vatican in the world.
No way. Wow. Yep. That's fantastic.
And actually,
there is I would have visited Pittsburgh anyways, but I now have even more of a reason to.
And next week I'll be interviewing the author that wrote a book on St. Anthony's Chapel. It's an incredible, incredible story. I've been there. It's an amazing, amazing place. So
it's really humbling, you know. It's really humbling and connects you to these great heroes of the faith that we ask for their help all the time. And then to say like, oh, wow, look, there's a part of Padre Pio right here. Yeah. Like, how crazy is that?
Right on. So as we wind down here, Tommy, I want to give you an opportunity to tell people about your work, where they can find, your radio show, your podcast, whatever all you're involved in these days first.
Yeah. Oh, sure. So they can go to CatholicHipster.com. That's the easiest place to go. It's got links to social media stuff. So I mostly use Twitter out of all the social media, I think, because it's just a place that matches up with my sense of humor, I think, pretty well. And they can see where I'm writing at. Right now it's Catholic Mom and Angelus News, which is like the Los Angeles Diocese magazine that they put out. And it also has links to the Catholic Hipster podcast I do with Sarah and The Chimney, which is a little short, brief social media rundown that they air on the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM. So CatholicHipster.com, that's the place to get you started.
Awesome. Now, you've mentioned throughout this interview today, the show, that this was your first book. Are there any more?
Well, right now my wife and I are writing a manuscript for Word Among Us Press. So they approached us and asked us if we wanted to write a how-to book on being a Catholic family. I don't know that we're even nearly qualified to write a book like that, but we're trying to write a book that, you know, shares our successes and failures and hopefully has a little humor in it, but also gives people like practical tips for incorporating Catholicism into their family life, which can be hard because it's busy and messy. And, you know, when it's when it's 8 o'clock and you've got three kids, you know, seven and under that need to go to bed, it's easy to skip bedtime prayers because you want to get them in the sack, right?
Right.
So we want to talk about the importance of praying as a family and other tips and tricks for helping your kids kind of enjoy Catholicism as young kids.
Awesome. And where can people find the Catholic Hipster Handbook?
Sure. Local Catholic bookstores are a good place to start. I know the Daughters of St. Paul, Pauline bookstores around the country have it, which is awesome because I just love them so much. Or if you're like me, at the local Catholic bookstore is many, many miles away. You can definitely hop on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or AveMariaPress.com and find it there too.
All right, Tommy. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule today to spend with us. Any closing thoughts?
Well, I just want people to remember that being Catholic is really cool. So if you've got, you know, young kids or teenagers or even worse, college-aged kids like I used to be, you can tell them that if they really want to be cool, they should delve deeply into their Catholic faith. And when they laugh at you, you can hand them this book and they can read all these great people who are telling them in very short snippets that even they can understand and stick with how cool it is to be Catholic. Maybe they'll stick around. I hope it helps. If it helps one person stick around in the church after college, then I will feel completely satisfied.
There you go. Awesome mission. And with that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Redbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And until next time, God bless. Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.